And we'll start off today with the future of science and faith. Deborah Harzma, former president of BioLogos.
Okay. Thank you, Ray. And hopefully you're here to hear me because there was a schedule change. I was originally at 11:15, so I'm going to stick around at 11:15 for anybody who shows up then. And thank you for sticking out to the end of the conference. I was hoping Jeff Hardin was here and I could rib him about differential equations. How could he not like differential equations and multivariable calculus? Anyway. He was being mobbed there probably, yes. But I so appreciated his talk and Ruth Vancevich's as well about wonder. That's one of my favorite topics. But what I'm here to talk about today is the future of science and faith. No, I can't tell the future. Of course I can't. But I'm hoping by talking about some of the trends that are going on and trends that have been with us for a while and will continue for a while, that will equip us for addressing what is to come. So by science and faith, what do I mean by that? I mean this whole project that we're doing, that ASA does, and all the other organizations in the exhibit hall, where we are showing that faith and science are not at odds, but can work hand in hand. We're showing scientists who are skeptical of faith that they can work together. We're showing Christians who are skeptical of science that science can work with their faith. We're addressing practical needs in the world based on our Christian values. All of that whole project, that's what I'm talking about, not just one thing. So that is the plan. And I have a few notes here, so I'm just pulling this up. Okay. All right. Oh, I also wanted to say that this is a pretty new talk for me, so I really look forward to your questions and comments as I develop it further. So here's my outline. I can only do so much in 20 minutes. I picked two big trends that are happening, and I have two suggestions then for messaging that I think will be working well in the years to come, and two ideas for delivery, how we deliver that message. So I can't tell the future. And in fact, things have changed so rapidly. Things have been changing a lot even since I submitted this abstract in January. Even since I submitted this file last week, things have changed. But I'm hoping to go for some of these longer term trends. So one of these big trends is the kinds of topics that we are talking about. Now, BioLogos and ASA for a long time have dealt with origins questions, age of the earth, evolution, divine action, scripture interpretation. On the secular side, new atheists have been talking about these questions a lot. Richard Dawkins, Jerry Coyne, all about evolution and origins. And this has been really good work, important work for us to be engaged in current topics. And these topics are still current. We still get lots of questions at BioLogos about these things. And I've visited a couple of small Christian colleges in the middle of the country in the last few years, post-COVID, where origins was the number one question they were asking about. So these are still with us, but what I am seeing is that several other topics are growing in importance. Now, environmental issues, longtime interest of ASA members going back decades, but with climate change, it has this new urgency that is impacting all of us. Representation in STEM fields, ASA has grown so well in this in the last 10 to 15 years, certainly since I became a member in the 90s when I was like one of the very few young women and it was almost all old white males. So it's improving, but we still have a ways to go. Public health, access to healthcare, racial disparities in healthcare. COVID really highlighted for me and maybe for a lot of white Americans and white Christians that there are still a lot of disparity in healthcare access in this country. And then we've seen the backlash against vaccines and increasing disease from that. Public health issues are really critical. Artificial intelligence, we all know that has changed our lives a lot and will continue to rapidly change our lives. And even this whole ethos of techno-salvation that new technologies, that's where we're going to better humanity somehow. There's a whole worldview there coming out of the tech bros that we need to be engaging. And now, just in the last few months, government funding of science research has become a really critical topic. I remember I was on Capitol Hill as a lobbyist, you know, lobby for a day through my American Astronomical Society in the early aughts, and science funding was the most bipartisan topic ever. No partisanship at all. That has sure changed. So now you're aware of all these issues, and many of these have been addressed in the last few days. The point I really want to make is that the second list of topics is different in a lot of ways than the first, because it not only requires changing hearts and minds, but changing behaviors and collective action. So it requires action. So, for example, on climate change, so I'm going to be showing a lot of different survey results, and I'll try to remember to explain each graph to you. All of these are results of surveys of Americans, so apologies to people in other countries, but I'm sure you're watching America closely. So this is a Pew study from 2022, and it asked, the dark blue is highly religious Americans. These are Americans who go to religious services once a week. They pray daily. Their religion's important to them. So people like us, highly religious Americans, and then medium and low religiosity. And look at this one. They asked them, do you believe that God gave humans a duty to protect and care for the earth? 92% of highly religious Americans completely or mostly agree with that. That's amazing. So, first of all, I'm just really encouraged that my fellow believers can be on board with that. Second, if you're messaging on this, you don't have to argue people into this. You can assume that and say, we all here as believers believe that God has called us to a duty to protect and care for the earth. But it also makes it very different than the origins topic, where people were very divided on the biblical case. I mean, that was where all the conversation often is. So here, the biblical case is clear. What's the debate about? Well, the scientific evidence and the state of that. And so here, highly religious Americans are the least likely to agree that climate change is an extremely or very serious problem. So then we're debating scientific evidence, which, hey, we're scientists here at ASA, so that's something we can talk about. But when it asks about the seriousness, there's also the implication of, is this serious enough for me to care about, to take action, to do something? And there's a disagreement about that. And that issue of taking action, suddenly that's a whole new kind of conversation. So it's individual action, and it's also collective action. So collective action, this could be government things or private sector. So yes, federal government policy, but also local governments, also major corporations. How are they acting? Also educational institutions. The kinds of issues on that second list require us to be working together for the public good. And hey, shout out to Mike Beidler, who last night at the ASA, State of the ASA, reminded us how politics is a good thing in the sense of us collectively determining what is the best moral action. And as believers and citizens, we should be speaking into that. Now, Christians are going to disagree about policy choices. That's fine. There's no one policy or political party that is going to be the kingdom of God. But these policy public sphere conversations are now much more part of what we are doing here on Science and Faith. Individual action is also needed. It's not just about changing hearts and minds, but about our habits, our life choices. So all of that is coming into play in many of these newer topics. All right, so that's the first trend, big trend that I'm seeing. Second big trend I'm seeing is earning trust is harder than ever. No surprise on that, I'm sure. So there's decreasing trust in organized religion. This is a graph from 2007 to 2021, just a 14-year time span. And in that time span, we have up here the percent of U.S. adults who identify with Christianity dropped from 78 to 63%. And those who identified with no religion went from 16% to 29%, almost doubled in just 15 years. The sociologists are just like, this is a huge demographic change. And it means they are not trusting religion, don't want to identify with it. Now, you have to know that that does not necessarily mean they've given up on God. So this is a survey from 2023. The colors here, the dark blue is religious and spiritual, so for people who are practicing an organized religion. The gray is spiritual but not religious. And this bar here is people who have no religious affiliation, okay, very small here. They don't see themselves as religious, but they see themselves as spiritual, about half of them. The other half are seeing they are not spiritual at all. But a lot of these people would be believing in God. A lot of them might be people who have left the church, who are deconstructing their faith. Some of them desperately would like to reconstruct their faith if only somebody could show them that Christianity cannot be whatever burns them out of the church. Many of them have had bad experiences, which means that we have a great opportunity here as believers to show that sort of audience that there is a better way. Christians can be caring and ethical and respect science and all of those things. So trust in religion and religious voices is declining. And of course, trust in the scientific community. Now this one is by political party. So blue for Democrat, red for Republican from year 2000 to 2022. What's your confidence level in the scientific community? So for a long time, this was, look, 2000 to 2006, it was the same. Everybody said, you know, okay, it'd be nice if it was greater than 50%, but you know, it wasn't partisan at all. And then I think this is Obama coming into power, we had a split. Then this is COVID. Here we have, right during COVID, Democrats go way up, Republicans go down, but then since then, Republicans are coming back down. Democrats are coming down as well as Republicans. The next round of this will probably be this year, and we'll see how that's continuing. Okay, so science is polarized. Polarization. Maybe you've heard me tell this joke. The dog looks at its owner and says, "Wow, my owner spends time with me, feeds me, cares about me. My owner must be God." And then cats, as we heard yesterday, cats looked at their owner and says, "Wow, he feeds me, cares for me, spends time with me. I must be God." Ah, cats. They can be experiencing the exact same thing and have a completely different response. And that's the punchline I've been giving to this slide for some years. But we're not actually looking at the same thing anymore, are we? Like, things have become... There's so much misinformation. There's so much in the social media algorithms that just shows you what you already believe. It is very hard to be even seeing the same information. We're not even drawing on that. So all of that makes earning trust harder than ever. What do we do in the face of that? So I have two messaging proposals and two delivery proposals. So for messaging, focusing on the significance of humans. And my advice here is cutting across all these different topics on science and faith. This is a quote from Elaine Howard Eklund's book in 2018. And they studied multiple scientific topics and multiple religions as well. And what they found is that religious Americans of all types actually appreciate science, okay, in 2018. I know this is somewhat dated, being pre-pandemic, but I think this advice holds. They found that Americans also care deeply about maintaining an active role for God in the world and protecting the idea that humans are created in the image of God. And if you can convey your scientific topic with those things in mind, people are much more open, religious people. And that's a lot of the work that I did at BioLogos, is conveying the science of evolutionary biology, of the great age of the universe, but explaining it in this larger context, that there, God can still have an active role in that, in my view, and that humans are created in the image of God, that those scientific findings are not threatening those spiritual categories. But I think this is true of other topics as well. So we can think of other examples. And I'll have some, I think, coming up on another slide for going to Christian audiences. It is also true, I think, for non-religious audiences. For a lot of the topics coming up, I think they're asking questions about the roles of humans and environment and climate change. How do you value human needs versus the needs of species we're trying to protect, for instance? On cosmology, what's the place of humans in this vast cosmos? How are we significant? Gene editing, how do we make these decisions? I should have had embryo stuff on here after Jeff Hardin's talk. And artificial intelligence. These things, even people with no religious background are saying, whoa, there are some ethical implications here. How do we think about who humans are? And Christian theology has amazing messages in answer to those questions. So we have a ton to offer. The problem is that Christianity is increasingly seen as irrelevant or even harmful. Oh, meanwhile, you know, STEM is bringing up, raising all these important questions. So those of us at ASA who are believers and scientists have so much to bring here because we can bring these together. And when we do that, we're going to help re-earn trust and motivate action. Okay, second piece of messaging advice is to make it relevant to their lives. If you're going to motivate action, especially, and this is actually true if you just want to change their view on something or their attitude about something, but if you want to change somebody's behavior, you have to tap into deep motivations, connecting to things they already care about. Now, you don't want to fall into the trap of trying to get them to care about something they don't already care about. And for a long time, messaging on environment, it was save the polar bears for climate change. Well, okay, then you show a cute picture of a polar bear and you get brief warm fuzzies from it. But most people have no personal experience with that. And it's not something they already care about. So you have to first make them care about the polar bears and then make them care about climate change. That doesn't work. Not at the deep level that you need it to. Now, amazingly, there is research on climate change messaging. What makes a difference? What allows things that will change action, change views, that people will not have a backlash against? And there is a great summary, 8 principles for effective inviting climate communication. It's there. If you Google it, you can go to the web and see the web version. It has links to all of the research that shows that these messages work. I'll pass this around if you want to have a look at it. You can follow the Yale Climate Communication Group, Potential Energy Coalition. One of their big things is make it personal. Tap into what people already care about. So for everybody, what do you care about most? Your family and your kids. If whatever the issue is, climate change, public science funding, any of the other issues I mentioned, show the impact on their family and people will pay attention. For Christians, things we care about the most, we care about following Jesus. We care about our faith communities. We care about the least of these because Jesus said to care about the poor and the hungry. And if you can put your message in those terms, that will tap into those deep motivations. Similarly, for non-religious, the things that they value. So that's making it relevant to their lives. If you want a little homework problem, after this, you can sit down and take your favorite issue. Maybe it's science funding and think about how to put it in terms of things that your audience cares the most about. All right, 2 tips on delivery before I wrap up. Keep listening and making the case. And this is always the challenge. And it's so easy to fall into these temptations. But try to not do that. Take heart, be encouraged, keep doing the work of hearing concerns, empathizing with their emotions, taking questions seriously, not just assuming the case is obvious and saying, well, duh, look at science. No, be prepared to address those concerns and identify with the emotions. There's a ton of good tips in Francis Collins' Road to Wisdom on this, based on his own experiences. And this is also a great thing that we're doing here in the ASA community with that wonderful set of values of radical hospitality and intellectual curiosity. And then deliver your story. Tell your story. This is hard for scientists because we are trained to remove anecdote and have it just be about data, right? But story is king. the huge concern of people who have no religious affiliation is the hypocrisy of religious people. But if you're authentic in telling your story and be open about your doubts and concerns, that can reach people. People like stories. They can't argue with a story. And in fact, they don't even get into argumentative mode. And I've found that a lot when I'm doing public speaking. If I tell about origins in terms of my personal journey, then people don't get their hackles up. And they'll just, oh, that's interesting. That's how, what she experienced. And then later they're remembering the story and going, oh. Whereas if you just say, well, this is the right view, people, you know, totally get their hackles up. Little bonus wonder that we've been talking about at this meeting. Guess what? It's not polarized. This is new data this spring. And these numbers all right around 40% for every single religious and non-religious group. Everybody feels a deep sense of wonder about the universe at least once a week. Yes. All right. Thank you very much.
Well, we'll take the next 5 or so minutes for questions. Question?
See a hand here. So, in terms of what people care about, you know, as you said, Christians caring about the least of these seems to be a fundamental Christian value. One of the discouraging things these days is that many of my fellow Christians seem to have abandoned that. Do you have any thoughts for how to overcome that?
I see the same thing, and it's very troubling. I think sometimes it's putting it in the right terms, maybe, or connecting the dots for people can help. So back in the 90s, I had started to hear some about climate change. I'm like, oh, that's too bad. You know, like that's going to be an issue. And then somebody pointed out to me that sea level rise was going to really impact Bangladesh. And at the time, my husband and I were supporting a missionary in Bangladesh. I had been praying for those people. And now all of a sudden it became real to me. So if there's those kinds of things that you can connect it to what people are doing that in a specific way, that might help. We all have a political identity as well as religious identities, family identities, all those things. We're all a mixture of those. So a lot of this is, how do you activate that religious identity in people? How do you give the signals that put them into their Sunday morning mindset and not their scrolling the news mindset? It's not a magic bullet, but those, I don't know.
Good. Question in the back.
Thank you so much, Deb. The frustration that I have now is, and many of us do, and you mentioned it, is that you might be talking to someone and trying to find common ground or, you know, unite on common values, but they're hearing very different information from their news, trusted voices and news sources than I listen to. And so it's hard, you know, you end up disputing whose news voice is right or wrong and who's being brainwashed and who's not. And it just, it makes it very hard to find at least a common sense of what is actually a fact that we can debate about what we should do about it or not. But do you have any recommendations on what to do if you're talking to somebody who's gotten some information from a source that you think is wacky, but they think what the news I get is wacky? So how do you start a conversation with that noise?
Yeah, you both are asking the right questions. This is extremely hard, and I don't know if I've got the right answers or if, you know, Francis Collins is, it feels like wise advice, and it does work sometimes. But then so many times it doesn't. I heard one encouraging anecdote. Somebody was at a church where it was Red State, Texas. And it, you know, there was somebody they knew in the church who was a, you know, big fan of Fox News. And this person got up, you know, was coming to them and saying, oh, I am just so worried because there's chips in the vaccines. And she responded with, well, that would be so horrible if that were true. It's like empathizing with their emotion, like, wow, you're right. If that were true, that would be really bad to show that, okay, you're not wacko to be concerned. But then if it were true, and then like this person actually said, oh, you mean it isn't? And then, so sometimes you can get that, but then it depends who you're talking to. Other times it'll be like, well, da, 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 of course it's true. And yeah, and so sometimes I stay silent and you sometimes pick your battles, and I don't know. Can I give an encouraging word from our Lord Jesus that I was reading recently? Because it is hard to keep up our courage to keep doing these things. And I think a lot of this of loving our neighbor enough to listen to them and engage them and caring enough about the least of these to stand up for them and those things, that's what Jesus calls us to do. But in the upper room, he said to his disciples, "Peace I leave with you. Do not let your hearts be troubled and do not be afraid. In this world, you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world." So that's the refrain I've been coming back to all spring, that Jesus didn't promise there wouldn't be trouble, but that we could take heart. So,
what happens when like the questions or the different sources become more like theological? Like say someone has heard someone passionately arguing for more things. Seeing the Genesis aspect, like the super young person or old age or age. In that case, like, is it better to just phrase certain things as not non-negotiables that are open to like to think about and discuss at the table, or like is that too much compromise? Like, because people have heard so many different things where you can say like, oh, this is, we can table it for later, or is it like, because other Christians say, oh, this is too essential to like table it for later?
Oh, okay, so this is a great question. When do you say, no, these really are facts, and when do you say Christians can disagree about this? Because a lot of the topics that I've mentioned there, they're not the gospel. We can all follow Christ and we might do it different ways. I find it's a little different depending on the situation I'm in. If I'm at a church, I'm much more likely to say, we're going to have different views. Some of us might be younger. Some of us might believe in evolution, but we all follow the same God. We believe God is the creator. If I'm at an educational institution, I might say some of that, you know, we all believe in God as the creator, but let's talk about the how and the when and think about the science, and I would go into it more, depending on what role I have at that moment at that institution. And at the beginning of your question, you asked about theological things, and the thing there is you can... If the first thing you do is really emphasize your faith and your view that you love the Bible and you follow Jesus, and people really come to see, okay, I really am talking to a fellow believer here, and that you love the scriptures and you think Genesis is true, and it, some of those things that can help, but it's challenging.
Thank you very much, Deb.
Sure.